Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Susan Daffron, and I'm a book consultant and the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. So thanks for listening. Today we're here with Jack Appelman, who is the author of 10 Steps to Successful Business Writing, which has become one of the top two sellers for his publisher and for Amazon in the business writing category. And Jack teaches individuals to write more productively through group workshops, webinars, and one-on-one coaching sessions. He has more than 20 years of experience as a corporate trainer, professor, and public relations marketing specialist. He's earned outstanding feedback for his writing workshops to professionals in a wide array of fields that include not-for-profit organizations, banking, insurance, and accounting. And Jack's website is successfulbusinesswriting.com, which I spent some time on it, and it has a really wonderful tagline, which is, "Write better, achieve more." So, not surprisingly, today we're going to be talking about writing. We're going to draw quite a bit from the information that's in Jack's book, The 10 Steps to Successful Business Writing. So welcome, Jack, and thanks for joining us here.
Great to be here.
And first off, I wanted to ask you, I know that some of us who have been writing for a long time know how much of a struggle writing can be, so I imagine that you... You serve a wide range of professionals and fill an important niche here. What are the biggest problems that you find in your experience that professionals experience with their business writing?
The biggest problem is that people don't get to the point soon enough. They feel the need that they need to set things up and give a background, and maybe it's the way they've been taught in school, but people in business situations are extremely impatient. You need to get to the point right away. You have to start with the conclusion. I call it starting with the punchline. And I know you have a lot of people who are authors of different types of books, and listen, when you write a novel or even a feature story in a magazine, it's not always that way, but for the most part in business, you really need to start with the most important information to capture people's attention.
Mm-hmm. That makes actually a lot of sense. And, I mean, even with many types of writing, I mean, even books, you kind of need to, and certainly with magazine writing, you need to hook them with something interesting or they're not going to read farther. And in today's attention deficit world, I mean, if the first sentence of your email doesn't capture someone's attention, they're, you know, you're 2 seconds away from the delete key. So,
well, with emails, it's really the subject line. With subject,
yeah,
line,
exactly.
Is such an important part of email writing, particularly people who are trying to get other people's attention to try to get people to buy into their ideas or buy the products or services. You really should spend some time in thinking about what's the most engaging subject line I could write. And think about the emails that you've opened from people who you don't know. Which subject lines got you to open the email more than others? And it's a subject line of an email is like a headline of a newspaper. You scan the newspaper and you decide based very much on the headlines which stories you're going to read. Same thing goes with emails.
Well, yeah, and with people, I mean, some people routinely get 200 emails a day, so if you want yours to be one of the one that actually is
right.
Singled out to be read, you know, that's...
Yeah,
exactly.
And not only singled out to be read, but you can start engaging people before they even read the emails, because so many people today look at emails on their BlackBerries. And they're really just seeing the subject lines. So if you could say something like, let's say if you need somebody to write a meeting agenda, you would say, instead of just writing meeting agenda, you would say agenda needed for June 1st meeting by May 25th. And this way the person, even before he or she starts reading the text of the email, hey, Susan wants me to do that agenda, I better start thinking about that when I get off the train or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way to start engaging people right away.
Mm-hmm. So this is, I'm guessing that this type of issue is what led to you writing your book, is seeing some of these problems, right?
Yeah, I saw how much people struggled, and I want people to tell me what I need to know. And some people just struggle so much with getting to the point quickly. It's like instructions on how to use the software, and you see how people like, wait a second, I still have to call this person. I don't understand how the instructions are written.
Mm-hmm.
You have to write it clearly so I can understand. And you know, people, I think a lot of the problems people have go back to the way that they were taught to write from, you know, grade school, high school, and college, when people were had to do the essay or the composition, and they were encouraged to use a lot of new vocabulary words if it was an English class, with a minimum number of words, at least 500, at least 1,000 words. And I think that so many of us are still conditioned to write that way. Even though we know we shouldn't, there's this feeling in us that more is better, more is better.
Mm-hmm.
But more is not better. In most cases, less is better. And I think it's very difficult habits to break. That in business, you don't need to set something up with an introduction, a body, and a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You need, in most cases, you want to start with the conclusion and then give more background and information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I was just talking to someone on a call earlier today about I always think of that sort of horrible wordiness as corporate speak. And there's some, I mean, that's just sort of my internal name for it. It seems like there's people who have often worked in large companies get this sort of corporate speak going, where they can't just say something simple like, I need you to prepare the agenda for the May 25th meeting. They have to use the $3 word when the 25-cent word would do.
Yeah, let's have some FaceTime. We need to schedule a dialogue. You know,
yeah, exactly.
How about a call? Right? No, we need some FaceTime. Need to schedule a dialogue, and we need to. In my programs, I have a slide where I have all these buzzwords, and we need to interface with people and our staff. We need to actualize our marketing goals, and I think there's this feeling in a lot of us that, hey, if we use these words, we'll really sound like we know what we're doing. We'll sound sophisticated. But in reality, that sometimes you use these words too much, the message that comes across is, hey, this person's trying pretty hard to impress me.
Yeah.
Which doesn't send a very positive message.
Exactly. I completely agree. And it's, one thing that's funny is that, and I can totally imagine your slide on this, I can't even make it up, but there's really, I've just met so many people who write that way, and they can recognize that simple writing is easier to understand, it's more clear, you know, there's more action, there's things like verbs, and they seem to recognize that as a good thing, but they just can't seem to write that way. And I mean, you must encounter this in your teaching and your workshops and everything. How do you kind of get people past that?
Well, I tell you, I have a very oversimplified answer to it. But what I tell people is, write like you speak. And I say, what? I write too much like I speak. And I ask people, how many of you here think that you speak more naturally than you write? And most people raise their hands, because I think most of us do speak more naturally than we write. I ask you a question, you give me a response, and you tell me what's going on. What I find is in my coaching of the corporate employees and college students, I'm sitting down with them, or I'm even on the phone, and I say, I don't understand what you're trying to say in this paragraph. I say, oh, well, Jack, I'm trying to say this, this, and this. I say, okay, then write this, this, and this. Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's sometimes if you – and I do an exercise where people – somebody's forced by their by his or her boss to say something in 60 seconds, give me what happened at the meeting. When you're forced to be concise, you will be concise. When you speak you on the phone, you're more natural. And in business writing, and again, this doesn't apply to every type of writing, doesn't always apply to writing novels or other types of writing, but in business writing, it should be conversational. It's like you are having a conversation with somebody. Here's what I want you to do over the next 30 days. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, and I really tell people that most people make it way too complicated.
Yeah, I think that I think that that's really true, that a lot of people make writing in general way too complicated, that there's a lot of, and I think like you're saying, some of this comes from school, and a lot of anxiety being that's tied up in the act of writing and worrying about, fretting about writing memos and things to your boss, and I mean, talking about business writing, and it's really... I mean, it's really a vitally important skill to have to be able to communicate well in writing, and I think that it's a lot of companies don't recognize that. I think.
Well, they're starting to, and a lot is being written about how that writing and communication skills are probably the most important skill. Not to use that word twice. For that, the criteria for advancement and getting better jobs. So it is, in a big way, the corporate community is starting to recognize that,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. It was not when I was in the corporate fold. It was not recognized as a good thing. Of course, then again, I was working at companies that I was working. In companies where I was like a tech writer, and you know,
right.
The whole thing with Dilbert. I mean, it's true. So everybody hates the tech writer.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, in some cases it was thought of as something. Oh, we have a writer to do that.
Yeah.
And then what happened, I think, is that with people, you know, with the advent of computers and everybody. Now everybody writes their own messages. I mean, there's usually you write your own, and you're constantly generating so many emails.
Mm-hmm.
And all these emails are really reflecting on who you are, because we deal so much now with people who we rarely meet, or maybe people who we never meet face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
So our writing becomes our personal brand. It's the way people know us. And people realize that others form impressions about you by your words. So people are taking more care to write words that make an impact, or they should be. Some people are starting to recognize it, but it's still a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what keeps me in business.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking you're probably doing pretty well. I mean, this is a huge need.
Things have picked up, yes.
Well, yeah, I would imagine. So let's talk about some of the things that people can work on to really start communicating more effectively in their writing. What are some of the key steps that people can work on to just start being more clear, less long-winded, less corporate speak? Where can you start with that?
Well, you could start with again thinking about how you'd say this message in a conversation. What's the bottom line? Start with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to there's certain techniques you need to do, like being able to use strong verbs, and really like the correct use of the verb is probably one of the easiest ways to make your writing more compelling. You know, I'll give a quick example. If you say something like, we should make modifications to this proposal, it sounds like a perfectly fine sentence. It's not grammatically incorrect. But when you say make modifications, you should easily, when you're looking over your first draft, you should change make modifications to modify.
Yeah.
We constantly hear people say, yes, you know, we are in agreement. And it sounds perfectly natural. No, make it we agree. And there, that's an easy way to find what we call the hidden verbs. In other words, they're now nouns, like modification is a noun. Instead of make modification, we say modify. So right off the bat, I think that's an easy way to make your writing stronger. You come across more decisively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that I know I have tried to stress with authors is to try and simplify sentences so that, you know, and people sort of hate this because you're getting all grammatical on them, but, you know, subject, verb, object, you know,
right.
Three things. You have a person, place, or thing, the verb, what did they do, and then, you know, the object, what did they do it to, whatever, and just keep it as simple as possible without all the helper words around it, and that will frequently strengthen writing, certainly simplify it, and hopefully make it shorter and more clear.
Yeah, exactly. And I work with a lot of people who, for whom English is not their first language.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have a more limited vocabulary than the average person who was born here. And I tell them, use the words that you know. You know, sometimes I find, you know, particularly some of my graduate students who are from English is not their first language, they try to use words and they're not using them in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You're better off just sticking to the words you know, because in business it's just about, you know, you really have to take a step back and say, what am I trying to do? If I work in human resources and my objective is to get people to buy into what I'm doing or buy into this new software we're using or this new benefit program, right? That's my objective. So what I need to do is get it across in the simplest way possible. You know? So if you have certain words that you know, just use those words. You don't need to have a massive vocabulary to be an effective business writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could make the argument that sometimes it can be a liability because sometimes the people you're communicating with do not have a massive vocabulary. So, you know, think about – in fact, I've read – relatively recently that in doing, for example, marketing writing, you want to, you know, a lot of people have heard of the Fleisch-Kincaid grade index.
Mm-hmm.
You actually want to lower that pretty much down to like almost as low as you can. Don't be writing at a 11th grade Fleisch-Kincaid index. Be writing at like a third or a sixth grade index, using the small words with that everybody understands, because a lot of people, you know, not everybody's a big reader, so.
Exactly, yeah, and you do have to be careful. There are a lot of idioms that we use in the English language that are not. There are people who have, you know, learned English fairly well, but there are still things that they don't pick up on. I had a situation. I was given a workshop about a month ago, and a gentleman from Israel, and he challenged, like one of the chapters of my book is, and I put it on the workshop, is, you know, tap the power of simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
Simplicity is a beautiful thing. Say, well, why say, what does tap the power mean? What are you talking about? Why not say, you know, be simple? So. And I understood what he was saying, but at the same token, you do have to, you know, pick up some of the simple, more simpler idioms. But you know, there are a lot of things that there's no reason to use these fancy words when the straightforward language does the trick.
Mm-hmm.
And
actually, just as an aside, having mentioned the Fleisch-Kincaid index, I think that most word processors have a tool built into them, so you can actually see what grade level you're writing to if you turn on like the grammar checker and stuff. So it actually can be kind of educational to look at that just to see, you know, is nobody, are people not reading my memos because I'm using big hard words, or, you know, what is the problem here?
Well, it could be that. It could be that maybe it's not organized properly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting to the point soon enough. I have too many things in there. I'm not very confused about the focus. And I think that index is a very good idea. But another thing that people don't do enough when they're writing or when they're reviewing, see, what I teach is that one of the best, most important techniques you can do in writing is your editing, is your review of your own work.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier. And again, I'm sure a lot of people in the publishing industry know that it's so much easier to edit what someone else wrote.
Oh, yeah.
But to be a good writer, you need to be able to edit what you wrote and be able to review it as the reader. And I think those indexes are a great idea. But you also need to use what I call one of the most important techniques of editing, and that is your gut feeling. You have to say, okay, I've gotten all these business emails. If I read this, would I think this is good? Would I think this is effective? And maybe you read it out loud. And when you read it out loud, if you find, you know, there's something a little off there, if you find something off, you know the reader's going to find something off.
Mm-hmm.
So you really, it's, you know, sometimes we're so conditioned to, you know, how we were taught to write. And there are certain things you need to do. You need to have proper grammar, proper usage. You need strong verbs. You need this. But you also need your to use your gut feeling, because you are also good writing is about the reader.
Mm-hmm.
And you've read so many things, and you need, I always tell people at the end of my workshop is one of the things they need to do is read, and not just read, but read with a more critical eye. So when they read a newspaper article, say, hey, that was a well-written article, or it was confusing, because I've read a lot of newspaper articles that are confusing. And when you get something across your desk, like an email, a business email, just say, that was what my boss sent me, a very well-written email, or he sent me a confusing one. By reading with a more critical eye, you'll be able to write better, because you'll be more conscious of from the reader's standpoint, and that's where your whole gut feeling comes in.
Yeah, one thing that's sort of interesting, you know, looking at your, you know, some of the 10 steps that actually are on your website as well, some of these things are a little bit intangible, and that's kind of, you know, what you're talking about as far as if you're a big reader, then it's easier for you to recognize some of these things, like this is clear, this is not clear, because you're spending so much time reading anyway. And another one that you mentioned on the website is you say write with rhythm and order to hold your readers, and that's sort of a, you know, kind of a intangible thing if you don't feel like you're a writer. If you are a writer, and you know, obviously those of us who've written books and whatever, it's like to some degree I believe that comes naturally, just partly like you say from reading, but also from having done a lot of writing. But if you're kind of a beginner, are there ways you can sort of develop that sense of order and rhythm and seeing how words flow?
Well, there's two things. First, there is the, like you said, the really developing a style.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, there's really you have to have the proper balance in your writing. Just like the balance of something being parallel that you see on a wall. Your writing needs to be parallel. Your language needs to be consistent. Like if I say, this month we'll generate new leads, and next month we'll work on the closing of more sales. The two phrases are not consistent. You want a big mistake that writers make is they don't use consistency within a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to say, and I'm hopefully this translates. I know there's no visuals here, so I'll repeat it again. So the inconsistent language is, this month we'll generate new leads, and next month we'll work on the closing of more sales.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, you have generate, which is a nice action verb, and then you have the closing of.
Yeah.
So instead of saying that, you want to say this month we'll generate new leads, and next month we'll close more sales. Okay. Then you have the balance between generate, an action verb, and close, another action verb. So I think you do need to take a look at it at the and this is not, this is less instinct, is real, you know, a following proper style, consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So people do have a big problem with consistency and balance.
Well, and that's something you see a tremendous amount in bullets. And this is something where, you know, grammatically speaking, it's parallel construction. It's like you want all of your bullets, like you're saying, if that were a bulleted list, then, you know, this month we're going to generate more leads, we're going to work on referrals, and we're going to, have presentations. So whatever it would be, it all starts with a verb. So if you see it in a bulleted list, you're we will colon verb, as opposed
right.
to, you know, having all these different types of constructions. And a lot of times that's another place where you end up with a whole lot of these helper words instead of the more simple writing, like you were saying, modification versus modify. You're throwing in nouns and mixing them in with verbs, and then you end up with completely non-parallel bullets, which are actually much harder to read and don't communicate the message
right.
as well.
Yeah, yep. Bullets are a perfect example. And bullets, again, you can choose any way you want them, but have them all consistent. Like in your case, you want to have all commands, like read, review, conduct. Have them all consistent. And again, the bullets don't have to be complete sentences, but they should be consistent with each other. And that's something that you can take. See, a lot of the techniques of good business writing, once you are become aware of them, a lot of them are somewhat common sense.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I think in a lot of my courses, it's refreshing people, it's reminding people that, hey, you want to make this consistent. And I don't have to do this to you every time. You could take a look at this, and you could see why this sentence does not have the consistent parallel structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that a lot of people probably learned this type of thing in school, but don't remember it. And, you know, those of us who have been editors for years and years, it's sort of like so ingrained into us that we can't help ourselves anymore. But people who do something else, like you were saying, the person who works in human resources, they don't have a copy of the Chicago Manual of Style sitting on their desk that they have had to memorize over the last 20 years. You know, they're working on HR stuff. So a lot of this...
Yeah.
These things, like you're saying, it's just really a refresher to just sort of bring back information that's probably back there in their brain somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing with rhythm, it's also the next step is really organization,
mm-hmm.
and figuring out how you want to organize something. And do you want to organize it by the order of importance? Do you want to organize it by time, chronologically? You know, figure out how you want to organize something.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of different techniques. You have the topic sentence, which is really, you know, starting with the big picture. You don't want to start with the details. You want to start with the big picture. Give people a framework for what you're talking about. And the other thing I'll mention is with bullets is we've all gotten these documents with a long list of bullets, like very long. And it's like when I see a very long list of like 7, 8, or 9, or 10 bullets together, it's almost like they're crying out to me, please separate us. We're too close together.
Yeah.
So
wait, we're all a giant mishmash now. Nobody's going to read
that. That's right,
them.
A giant – a giant mishmash. What I say is divide them. See if you can divide them up into subcategories. So maybe you have one subcategory has four bullets, one has three bullets, instead of like 9 or 10, which is like just much, much too hard for people to process.
Mm-hmm. And there's undoubtedly, with that many items of anything, there's probably a way they could be subgrouped, whether, like you said, you know, chronologically, order of importance, how they relate to one another. There's probably a way to group them, whatever it may be, and to just...
Yeah.
Impose a little bit of order on your giant laundry list of bullets.
Yeah, exactly. And the other mistake people make is they don't separate ideas. There's too many ideas, and you know, in business, you want to write shorter paragraphs, and you want maybe one idea per paragraph, maybe one idea, a couple of paragraphs. Stick with one idea, then move on to the next idea. And consider the use of subheads, subtitles. And you see a lot of magazine articles. I'm sure some of the people listening right now use subtitles when they write in magazine articles. And it's I find as a writer, it helps me organize if I use the subheads and just be able to move things around and make sure things are in their proper place. And I tend to use a lot of them after every few paragraphs. Some people don't use as many, but for me, it's a real help to be able to do it. And I think from a reading standpoint, when you read a magazine article, you want to have things broken up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and the same thing with a business a business document. And what it gets down to is a lot of the techniques in business writing. For me, from the way I teach, from journalistic principles. I went to school in journalism. I worked as a journalist for the first 5 years of my career. And journalists, again, as I'm sure as editors and people in this business do, you're taught to, particularly journalists, you're taught to get to the point quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my workshops, I take from a couple of days ago something from the Wall Street Journal, like that. The one or two sentence summary the Wall Street Journal has either on their online edition or they even have it on the printed edition on the top. And I say, just read this. And I say, here's what we all should strive for. This is what I strive for as a writer. No wasted words here, right? Very tight writing, good use of verbs. And if you want to read the whole story, you click on it and you can read the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're too busy, you know in a nutshell what's going on because that writer has in one or two sentences given you what's going on. That's good writing.
Mm-hmm.
And in business, it's about saying something like, we need to reduce overhead cost 25%. Here's how. Okay, all right, now you got my attention. Now I'm going to see what your ideas are.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the principles of journalism transfer very well to business writing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'd never really thought about it that way, but that's definitely a good parallel because with journalism, there's the classic 4 W's and the H. It's like where we have to get the facts out there quickly and. Like you say, it's I can't remember. Is it the pyramid or the inverted pyramid?
Yes, exactly. It is the inverted pyramid, which
yeah.
means that you start with the first most important, second most important, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it was always done that way because this way editors could cut from the bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing that leads me to, which I tell people always ask me, Jack, I don't know how much to include. I'm writing to different people in the company. I'm writing to the top, to the board, to the top executives, to the new employees. I said, here's what you do. You start with the bottom line. You start with the most important information. Okay? Maybe the top executives don't want to read anymore. Okay, that's it. I don't need to know anymore. But other people need to know more. You give people a choice. You start with the most important. Then you start filling in the details. So if somebody doesn't want to read that much, they can stop. Okay, this is all I need to know. Or if they need more background, they've got it. This way, you're covered both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One thing I've wondered, going back to emails, is it better to send? Because, like you said, in business documents, it's helpful to divide things up into subheads. It's helpful to have one thought per paragraph. Is it better to send more emails, each with just, you know, like one or two thoughts, versus sometimes you'll get the email that, you know, someone has written the great American novel in Outlook and has sent it to everybody, and you know that 95% of the people never got beyond paragraph two. So,
well,
you know, would that have been better to have been set up as perhaps a series of emails, or is it, you know, these are the things that I know that people struggle with, particularly in big companies, where a lot of times you have sort of the CYA problem, where I'll put it all into an email and then nobody can come back on me and say that I didn't tell them. But, of course, it was 15 paragraphs down and nobody read it. So,
yeah, there are different styles. I'm involved in the American Society for Training and Development, ASTD. As a trainer, and I've been on I'm a media past president of my chapter in Northern New Jersey, and, you know, we've had this debate about emails. I like sending fewer emails. Mm-hmm. I don't like sending a separate email for every single issue. I think it gets to be too many emails. What I like to do is I'll do usually up to two or three things in one email, and I'll try to include that in the subject line. Like if I'm talking about like 6-1 registration / awards / you know, documents, I'll try to put that in the subject line.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll say, you know, hi Susan, I hope all is well. Here are some issues I need to discuss. I'd like your response to. And I'll put one, June 1st registration. And then I'd rather have one email than have to send three emails. Certainly from a receiver standpoint, I'd like to get one email as opposed to three, assuming the subject line tells me what's in the email.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a good plan. I mean, I definitely agree with that, but I worry that since I'm a writer and, you know, perhaps not all of my clients are necessarily readers, that, you know, I've overwhelmed them with too much information. and I know that this happens a lot in business writing because, like you say, a lot of people are reading on Blackberries. They're just, it's really short attention span city out there.
Well, what you can do is, let's say you send an email on three items, and you send it today, and then you notice that the person has responded to just the first item. Then you could say, if you see he or she has not responded, or you want more, then you could say, you take the other items and say, hey, you know, thanks for helping me on this item, but when you have a chance, take care of this item. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully the person will deal with all three items. I just find that we get far too many emails. And there is actually the statistics show that for every five emails we send, we get three in return. So every time you send an email, you know, you're going to get a reply 3/5 of the time.
No wonder we all have problems with email.
Yeah, and the other thing that I believe about emails, and I've read this from email experts, is a controversial strategy, and people have challenged me on it several times in my workshops, is you don't have to thank every single effort. For instance, if you know somebody in your office, if you know somebody very well, either in your office or somebody you deal with all the time, and you send them an email, how do I, you know, where's the, which website has such and such information? And you send them the email telling them which website with the link.
Uh-huh.
They don't need to say, hey, thanks, Susan. Because you're saying, well, wait a second, Jack, isn't that being rude? No, it's not, because that's just one more email that you have to open. It's going to take time, and it's not necessary. If you're friends, if you deal with each other all the time, and maybe you send a few emails a day, you don't have to acknowledge every, you know, thank you for every single email. Now, of course, you need to use your judgment. If somebody, if it's a client or somebody else has given you something, obviously you want to acknowledge that. You want to make sure that you received it and all that. But I think too many times people send these trivial thank yous. And you say, what's the big deal? Well, it wastes time. They all add up, and they waste time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I probably err on the side of saying thank you too often. But I guess my excuse is that I type really fast, so I can do that really quickly, and I would hate for someone to think that I didn't appreciate something that they'd done. So.
Yeah, it's certainly a judgment call, but
particularly
when you work virtually, that somebody did something for you, certainly you want to acknowledge it. But if somebody who you, like a colleague, and you're communicating back and forth, or just, I have one more question, Susan, how do I access this information, and you send me a link, I don't need to send you, hey, thanks, Susan. Again, people may disagree, it's a judgment call, but I think people waste time with those types of emails, and then people would say, you would say thank you, and I would say, oh, no problem, Susan. Where does it end, right?
I know. Yeah, 75 emails later.
right.
What have we really achieved here?
Yeah, yeah.
That definitely does make sense. And I have tried to lower my email volume. I think as my email volume has incoming email volume has increased coming in, then I try to decrease it going out so that I don't get that type of thing happening, and that makes a lot of sense. So I definitely see the rationale for that and how it can keep on going and going.
Right. Yeah. But it's just a judgment call. There are times when you do need to thank someone, but if you look at all the emails you get, so many of them are just unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can we lower the level of unnecessary email? That's a good goal. So you had mentioned that writing like you speak actually is not necessarily a bad thing. And is that something that more people might try doing?
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think that that writing like you speak is a good thing, because when we speak, we tend to be natural.
Mm-hmm.
Natural, we come across, you ask me a question, yeah, this is the way you do it. What I would do, it's when you're talking about, let's say you're talking about a product or a service. It's kind of like think of like the elevator speech. And a lot of the people here are small businesses and they have services. When you're talking to somebody in a meeting, they say, you can in 30 seconds tell me what your business does. Same principle is tell me what I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people instinctively tend to set up their writing when they don't need to. Now, you should start with a friendly greeting or an email, but then you can get right to the point in most cases. Yeah, if you're writing a letter to a customer denying something, then you want to be a little bit more careful. But in most cases, you want to get right to the point. And if you notice when you speak, we tend to speak right to the point. It's the majority of people, speaking is a much more natural than writing.
Okay. So, as far as employees coming in, how well do colleges actually prepare students for on-the-job writing? I haven't been in college for a while, so I'm kind of curious to hear the answer for this one.
They could do a better job. And you see, I've taught for about 10 years. I taught full time. I've taught as an adjunct, and I've taught undergrads and graduate students. And some of the students say, well, you know, the other teachers don't teach us this type of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. See, with a lot of the problem is a lot of the writing assignments in college are a minimum number of words. And the students tend to, what they tend to do is, okay, I got to have at least 500 words, more fluff, more fluff, and more fluff.
Yeah.
And we all do it. We know we have to turn in a 500-word article. We're always looking at the words. And that leads to bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the employers have said that, you know, business schools especially, you know, need to focus more on writing and communication skills, presentation skills as well. Because they find that when somebody has gone through college and hasn't taken like a business class, business writing classes, that person comes in and has to write a business email as part of his or her job and doesn't really have experience doing it. So I would urge colleges to have a writing class mandatory for undergrads, a writing class, unless they're a journalism students, they really are prepared, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, colleges need to do a better job in teaching writing classes that prepare students for the writing that they're going to be doing on the job. I'm talking about, to some degree, undergraduate schools, master's program, started a pilot course at New Jersey City University in Jersey City, New Jersey, for the MBA program on writing and presentation skills. This is what employers want. And employers find that most, you know, first-year employees, they don't have it. It's not, they don't get enough practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heaven knows I didn't get it. I mean, I was an English major, but I was, you know, writing a, you know, critical essay on, you know, Macbeth or something is not really relevant to what's going on. Communicating well in the business world. I mean, a lot of what I learned in some ways from being a technical writer, which really focuses on, if you're trying to write documentation, the end goal is to write as clearly and concisely and you know, simply as you can, because someone trying to learn software is probably confused, possibly frustrated, likely annoyed. So they don't want extra fluff. They just want the facts, and they want to solve their problem. And I think that you know, oddly enough, that actually that experience of doing that and reading a lot about what made good technical writing actually helped my writing in general, because a lot of it, I mean, it's like you said, just as journalism writing can be applied to business writing, so can technical writing. And with that said, they're crummy journalists and they're really bad technical writers, but good technical writing is actually clear and easy to understand. Sadly, there's not enough of it, but...
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. So, but I mean, if you're looking at sort of, you know, what the goals are for those things, they're definitely in alignment. So,
yeah,
as far as and actually, I guess I sort of just alluded to some of this. How can good writing actually improve business results?
Well, a couple of different ways. The first is that. Remember that in business, people know you through your words. People form impressions about you by the words. If you're trying to attract new customers, that's how people get to know you. Other thing is that you're just going to achieve more. I mean, it's there was a study which said that the average person wastes 12% of his or her day reading ineffectively written emails. That's a lot of lost productivity. 12% of every day, and if you can write effectively, you can get more done. The person you're writing to will probably get more done. And you could also, from a personal standpoint, help demonstrate leadership skills. You could enhance your personal brand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're talking about, trying to get new business, it's you're trying to get people to buy into your ideas, to buy into your services. If you have a service, whether it's consulting or with publishing, whatever it is, how do you get people to buy into your ideas? How do you get them to see the benefits of what are going to be the results of working with you? How are they going to benefit? And that's writing from the reader's standpoint like anything else. So you really have to hone in on what are going to be the benefits of you as a prospect working with me as a small business person. And you have to be able to write that. So, to me, good writing in a lot of different ways improves the bottom line. You get more done, more productive, and from a new business standpoint, you could be able to convey clearly and in a compelling way, and you could be creative. There's definitely a lot of room to be creative. Convey why, what's the benefit to the prospect of working with me as a vendor, for lack of better terms.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that people don't, you know, really underestimate how much writing has an impact, particularly in marketing. I mean, a lot of corporations, if you look at their website, it's like, oh, my gosh, if they just wrote it in English instead of in corporateese, they might actually get leads from their online efforts instead of, you know, their website sort of sitting there like a lump.
And it's important with websites. It's important that you go to a website, you have to know immediately what the company does and what benefits it offers.
Yeah, within the statistic keeps getting shorter, but it used to be like 2 seconds or something, and now it's like a tenth of a second or something.
Wow.
It's like it's ridiculous. It's like as people's internet connection speeds have gone up, now your time to for someone to ascertain what you do and whether you're in the right place has dropped dramatically, and it's something ridiculously short. So yeah, you have to. I mean, again, it's like you were saying with the Wall Street Journal synopsis. It's like within a nanosecond, somebody can figure out, yes, I want to click that link. No, I don't want to click that link, because on a website, you know, you're one heartbeat away from the back key.
Yes, exactly.
And, so, yeah, I think that, you know, writing really can improve the bottom line, and a lot of people don't necessarily recognize that relationship, but it can be huge.
Yeah, and people don't meet anymore. Everything is like we communicate so much via email. It's nice to have a phone call and talk to somebody, but I think people should speak on the phone more, meet more. But given that they don't, then make sure what you write is makes an impact.
Yeah, exactly. And you know that a lot of times it's your chance to make a good first impression. Well, we're getting close to the top of the hour here. Are there any kind of final one or two key suggestions you could give our listeners to help them improve their writing? I mean,
well, I'll just reiterate a few key points that I've already said. One is to write with a sense of urgency, get to the key point right away. Think about how you'd say it in a conversation, and use your gut feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Read it as if you were the reader and say to yourself, is this good? Is this going to work?
Yeah.
And I think that's if you could do those things, you can make a big difference in the quality of your writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, and I've often said this about graphic design too, is that everyone is a reader, and everyone in the context of graphic design, I pointed out that everyone sees graphic design every day. You see magazine ads, you see see materials all around you, and people say, oh, I'm not an artist, I'm not an artist. But people have an aesthetic sense, and so if you, like, look at your website or you look at your brochure and go, wow, that's hideous, then probably it is. You know, give yourself a little credit. And I think that a lot of kind of new writers have a similar type of insecurity where it's like they don't give themselves enough credit. It's like if something sounds awkward or doesn't make sense to you, it probably is awkward and doesn't make sense.
I think that's
really good advice, you know.
Yeah. That's an excellent point. I think that the way you said it is a lot of us, we don't give ourselves enough credit.
Mm-hmm.
That, in other words, we should trust our own instincts because we know people we're writing to. Trust your instinct. If you think it's good, then go with it.
Yeah.
If you think there's something off, then figure out what's off.
Yeah, and I think your point on self-editing was actually a good one, is that, you know, take the time if it is off to go back and see if you can make it better, make it more clear, get to the point more quickly, you know, rather than just, you know, pressing the send button and going, well, maybe they'll figure it out. Maybe not so much. So for people who want to know more, what type of services do you offer to help companies to help them with their business writing? I know you do training and stuff.
Yeah, I offer group writing workshops, anywhere from half a day to a full day to 2 days. I offer one-on-one writing coaching in which I take each person, we develop goals, and then we set up a program, in most cases over the phone, and it involves critiquing the documents. Obviously, no proprietary information. I could care less if it's something in a business.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could be a program lasting a few months, and often it's combined with a corporation. We do the group writing workshop. Then we have the individual consults. I also do writing services, a PR writing consultation if somebody wants something written. And it's whatever it's from a company standpoint. With a company needs a specific goal, or the people aren't writing, people are too wordy, or people. I had one advertising agency had me come in because they had to hire too many freelancers to write their copy. And after I came in, the people who in-house were able to write better, from better marketing copy. So, So it's group writing workshops, one-on-one coaching, and what I call PR writing consultation, which means writing services and PR services.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Good information. Like I said, I'm sure there's some people who could use your help. Certainly some companies I wish would take you on and take advantage of some of those services that they could use. At this point, we are out of time, and I'd like to thank Jack for taking the time to be here. For more information and advice, you can find his website online and learn more about his services at www.successfulbusinesswriting.com. So thanks, everyone, for being here. And
thank you very much, Susan.
Yeah, and that was great. There was lots of good